one of the nicest and most special parts of the Jewish year is the festival of Pesach. And in our class, we're going to try to break down what is done during Pesach. We're going to start from basics and hopefully end with the deep understanding of the halachos of everything we're doing. Before we begin, we have to remind ourselves what's really going on here. When does Pesach really begin? So our sages teach us that the aura of Pesach settles in on Purim. 30 days before Pesach, which is Purim, we start preparing for Pesach. Purim here in Jerusalem. Okay, what can I do? There are people out of Jerusalem. But 30 days before Pesach is when we have to start learning the laws of Pesach, when we have to start being aware of what we're doing with regard to Pesach. Pesach is unusual in that suddenly we have many unusual commandments, and we have food that all year long is kosher, and during these 7 days in Israel or 8 days in Chutzlars, we're told, no, now this food isn't kosher. What we call chametz, which loosely defined is flour and water, that flour that united with some liquid, at least water, that can make it rise, ferment, and that fermentation process, which takes place only between the five grains and water and possibly certain other liquids, that's called chametz. So when we're going to approach Pesach, we're firstly going to approach with removing chametz from our home. So any home you walk into nowadays is busy starting the cleaning process, ensuring that chametz starts being removed from the home. This means we don't buy any extra cereals. This means we don't buy any extra wafers. It means we start getting the kids used to eating bamba, which is kitniyot, which isn't real chametz, so that the crumbs that they're making from now until chametz are really, so to speak, kosher for Passover crumbs. Because kids are one of the focal points of Pesach, and at the same time, they are one of the things we have to contend with in our cleaning for Pesach. So we have to, Chacham Einav Birosho, we have to use our heads in advance to see how we could clean for Pesach and not find, like that famous couple found on Pesach when it was excruciatingly hot, and surprisingly their air conditioner went off for the first time and blew Cheerios all over their Seder table. We don't want that. So we try to take care of our chametz starting from now. What does taking care of our chametz mean? So on the simplest level, it means we search throughout the home. We go through the closets. We go through the food closets, obviously. Us men have an easy time understanding this concept that you could eat a wafer and leave half a wafer on a table. Women look at it and say, what's wrong with you? What's going on? But for us men, that's very understandable. We know that we could be eating a cookie and suddenly our child's going to walk into the room, and it's very natural for us to slip it into a pocket so he doesn't see that we're eating the cookie right now because we want to put him to bed. Women are going to say, you put a cookie in your pocket. Yeah, but the halacha assumes that there are men around who will do what men will do, and that is put food in all kinds of weird places. So therefore, in anticipation of that, we have to start searching. 30 days before, we don't do the search, but we don't have to start cleaning. You can start cleaning 2 days before Pesach. But practically, it's easier if you divide the work task. And people should make lists. People should break down what do they really have to clean. Most men underestimate the work that's involved when it comes to Pesach. So smart person starts making lists, and our lists available online. Chabad.org has excellent... there's Passover.net, our excellent site where you could easily download, and I downloaded some stuff, which we'll get out in a minute, and I Yishkoach to Michael Arosh, who photocopied it and stapled it. Michael Arosh from Canada, sorry. Not from Canada? From Montreal, I'm sorry, I wasn't specific enough, yeah. So, Now we're starting. And as we clean, we have to try and ensure that chametz doesn't enter back to where we clean, which is a noisy feat. You could clean a room, then you go back in eating a wafer. So now, what have you accomplished? The cleaning serves two purposes. The basic purpose is to clean, and the second person is to organize the area. Because the night before Pesach, we have a commandment, a rabbinic commandment, that we have to search through the house. And historically, we would search with a candle, but today we search with a flashlight, or we turn on the light in the room, and then we use the flashlight. Our sages instituted searching with a candle in the evenings for two reasons. One, that people are home in the evenings. The average person is out of work. You tell a person to start searching in the middle of the day. He's not home. He's going to forget. People come home in the evening. That's the natural time when people are home. So our sages instituted that in the evening prior to Pesach, the evening before, we make a blessing and we start our search throughout the house. The second reason is that they wanted us to search with the candles, that we enter these little holes, these nooks and crannies, and we see what's there. I always used to consider myself extra pious because I'd take a flashlight and look under the bed, right? There's a crack about the width of a thumb under our bed. So I said, what are the odds that there's going to be chametz there? And Baruch Hashem, we have children. And Baruch Hashem, I have a wife who cleans very, very well. But the children are quicker. And last year came the night of Pesach, the night before Pesach, and I'm searching, and I'm really tired. We've been cleaning, and I said to myself, will I do it this year or not? I said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. So I bend down and I look, and when you're looking into such a crevice, it's a little difficult to know what you're seeing. And I see something there, and I move the bed, and it's a nice little piece of pita that our son managed to wiggle away before we saw it that day. We'd cleaned there, but maybe that was the place I was responsible for cleaning. Now that I'm remembering the story, it sounds starting to sound a little different. But at any rate, that was the point of this institution of candlelight in the evening, that we do look with candlelight in all the little crevices. Now today, you start looking by candlelight, we don't even know how to use a candle. It's a game. You start taking a candle, it's be careful not to drip here, be careful not to drip there. That's not the way it's supposed to be. So you turn on the fluorescent light, take a flashlight in your hand, you look around, you see, you don't see chametz, very good. Now you see down there, okay, you take your flashlight, you look down there, you look under the closet, look inside the closet, you look wherever it's reasonable that chametz might be found. Now, if you're going to do this without any preparation, in the homes that we have today, you're going to spend all night and you're not going to be done. And some people do spend all night till 4 or 5 in the morning, and then they enter the Seder pretty tired. So one of the things we're supposed to do in the process of cleaning now during this month is organize things in a way that it's going to be easier for us to do the search, so that when we come to the search on that night, it's going to be easier. I have over here sheets. We'll get them out. This one is the Passover 8 to Z from Chabad.org. Take one, pass it down. Chabad, yeah, Chabad. Chochma Bina Das. And this one is Order of the Seder Service, also from Chabad.org. If anyone is not going to hold on to these for the next 20 years, so pass them back to me. I strongly recommend you hold on to these. They're a nice outline. And we'll go according to their order of A to Z. Begin by learning about Passover. So now, 30 days before Pesach is a good time to learn. You start learning from the Mishnah, you're not going to get very far. So take these shortcut books. There's Rabbi Blumenkrantz's book. There are simple books from which you could learn. You could take the Chayyad on Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Doesn't matter. Take simple books. Take summaries to learn how you're supposed to keep Pesach. And then we said we start cleaning and we make a list. And there has to start being rules in the house. No chametz in this room, no chametz in this room. And eventually, no chametz out of the kitchen, and then finally, we usually bring it down to some other room, the Shabbos before Pesach, where usually the wife needs the kitchen already, and she's cooking only Pesach stuff, so the chametz has to be somewhere else. Even though when we're searching for chametz, we're searching for a sizable amount, an amount that we might actually eat, you find half a wafer, so depending on how hungry you are, you might say, gee, I wonder if this is still good. You can take a bite. You find a crumb, it's less likely. So this is in relation to the search. What are we looking for? We're looking for something about the size of half a wafer, something the size of a candy, something the size that you might actually eat.
Did you say candy?
Yeah, I said candy, but sorry, I don't got any here now. You're right. Guilty as charged. But when it comes to the kitchen, I do have walnuts here, right? I brought walnuts for everyone. Yeah, much healthier. But when it comes to the kitchen, we have to be more careful, because when it comes to the kitchen, so every crumb is relevant. You're not allowed to eat a single crumb. A crumb is a biblical prohibition on Pesach. You're not allowed to have a crumb in your food. So some people all year long won't bring sperm to the table, because they say, bring a sefer to the table, you have crumbs in your sperm, and on Pesach I end up eating the crumbs. And I do differently. All year long I bring sperm to the table, as any, all of you should know by now. We bring sperm to the table, we learn at the table, but Pesach I lock up my sperm. So 7 days a year I don't bring sperm to the table. On Pesach we don't allow any sefer at the table, because I know my sperm have crumbs. And crumbs we do have to be concerned about when it comes to the kitchen. And that is why it is recommended that a person should have a separate set of utensils, including a mixer, a food processor. These items have an engine. And if you look at the engine, there's going to be flour in the engine, there are going to be crumbs in the engine, and it's practically impossible to clean out the engine in a way that you don't have chametz in there. And that chametz interests us. Even though around the house you don't have to go, I know there are people who take toothpicks between the tiles and try to look for crumbs. You don't have to. We said that the area, the size we're searching for is something that we might actually end up eating. But when it comes to things that might end up in our food, our tablecloth, our utensils that we use in the kitchen, there we're more interested. And this coming Friday, God willing, we'll have a separate class on how we kasher the utensils. Meaning, you want to use your, let's say you want to use your
favorite cup,
your dishes, which dishes are kasherable, which dishes are not, how do we kasher a kitchen, how do we prepare the countertops. I mean, you will want to use your countertop. How do you do that? So we're going to try to deal with the basics this coming Friday, the halachos of kashering the kitchen. But that's not what we're dealing with now. Now we're just getting an overview, and then we'll start tackling the seder. So I said, as far as the toothpick, right. Oh, very good. Very good. So, a serrated knife cannot be kashered, for example, for Pesach, unless it's kashered with fire. All of this we will learn Be'ezrat Hashem on this coming Friday. And maybe we'll get to Thursday night, I don't think so. And Friday in our halacha class, God willing, we'll do that. But, so, we're cleaning. And when we clean the rest of the house, we have to check all the pockets. And when we're checking the night before, or here in the machon, if you're going to be leaving a week or 2 weeks, if you're going to be leaving before the night before Pesach, then you have to check your room earlier, unless you have a roommate who you could put responsible that he will check. When we check the house, so we could divide up, we don't all have to check every room, even though that is the ritual, and sometimes people like to do the first room together, the whole family. That's nice, but if you're going to check well, it's going to take time, and you should check well, so it's better to divide. You check one room, your brother checks another room. Every mature adult can check. We prefer that men check the house. One thing not to forget, people very often forget the bag in the vacuum cleaner. Right. It's filled with chametz. So that's chametz. Got to get rid of it. We take the garbage out of the house. Here in Israel, you'll find the garbage collectors working overtime before Pesach. They work every day, a few times a day. In the United States, in the Frumka, in the communities, they also try to get the garbage collectors to collect the garbage of the morning of Pesach, so that the garbage isn't in your possession. When the FBI ruled, when the courts ruled in the United States that the FBI may search one's trash, and they said that the second you put it out of your house, it is no longer in your possession. It's not that they don't need a search warrant. They're not entering your home. They helped us because they basically ruled that by taking our garbage out, we've taken the chametz out of our possession. It's not in our home. So the FBI could search our trash. In counter distinction, when the Russian government ruled that the rabbis don't need the special governmental seal on their transaction selling the chametz to the non-Jew, they heard us because they thought they were helping. They said, it's a religious ritual. We won't really hold them accountable for doing it with all the legalities. Maybe it's sales tax, I don't know. Maybe that was the idea. I don't know the whole history. So one of the things we do as we get ready for Pesach is we go visit the rabbi. And we make the rabbi our messenger. We give him over our chametz. How do we do that? We don't bring all the chametz and stashes and say, here rabbi, sell this for me. What we're saying is, I have some stuff at home which is either chametz or mixtures of chametz. Now some have the custom not to sell whole grain chametz, meaning they won't sell crackers. But they will sell mixtures of chametz, like whiskey, like beer, like all kinds of nash, which is... What? So whole grain people try to consume before Pesach. We try not to buy a lot, and we try to consume it before Pesach. Mixtures of chametz, so everyone will agree to sell. And what we do is, we come to the rabbi and we say, I have such and such chametz in my home. I would like you to sell it for me to the non-Jew. And then how do we do the transaction? So there's a kinyan called chalipin, where we say, I'll give you a handkerchief, and in exchange for the handkerchief, when you acquire my handkerchief, you are giving over to me a certain object or a certain area of land and the objects that are with it. And what we do with the rabbi is he gives us a handkerchief or a pen or some kind of instrument. And in exchange for his giving us that, we give him all our chametz. And we sign a contract, we sign over the area where the chametz is located to the rabbi, together with the chametz, and he will sell it to the non-Jew. A note to all the guys who are leaving to Chutz La'aretz: you have a problem with the time zones, you have to speak to the rabbi to see that he covers that. Pesach enters in Israel 7 hours earlier, and exits 7 hours earlier. So you have a problem. You have to make sure, if you're selling your chametz in the United States, you have to make sure they're selling it early enough that they'll have sold your chametz 7 hours earlier. If you're selling it in Israel and you're going to be in Chutz La'aretz, you have a problem because you have a second day of Yom Tov and Pesach only leaves 7 hours later. So you have a double problem on the exit side. So you have to speak to the rabbi. There are rabbis, I know, in Har Nof. I don't know in this area if there are rabbis who sell for people who will be on both time zones. But you could do it, and you should do it. Some rabbis will ask you to bring a key. The place where the chametz is located has to be a single or a few places, but it has to be quartered off. We set aside the chametz, and we don't want you to have a loaf of bread sitting on the counter and you say, oh, that's Mr. Redmond. Back in Muncie, we used to sell it to Mr. Redmond, the head of the UPS, who was the only one who could afford to buy a few million dollars worth of chametz. He'd also sign a loan. We had another guy in the community who used to back his loan. But he used to buy our chametz. So you can't have his chametz sitting on your counter. That doesn't work. It has to be set aside so he won't come to using it. You don't sell the vessels that you use chametz with. You also set them aside so he won't come to using them on Pesach. So if you have your favorite coffee mug, and you know you sometimes dip your... you pour boiling water into your coffee mug with chametz, or you just have ordinary use, but usually that's chametz use. So we say, a coffee mug usually can't be kashered, it's made of earthenware. So you have to put it aside, you have to close it off. The chametz, which is sold to the non-Jew, has to be closed off, and there has to be a sign where it's at. Usually when we sell the chametz, we tell the rabbi that the places are, that there's a sign where they are. So we need two things: A, that it'll be closed off, and B, a recognizable set-off place. So we're selling our chametz, and Chabad over here offers you to sell your chametz online. I don't know exactly how they work it. What? I don't know. I think you're best off going to rabbi and doing it. What are the things we have to prepare for the Seder? And those of you who are going to be guests by people, you should know that many people, not me not included, by me I don't want you to bring anything. Please do not bring anything. But many people expect that you will chip in or bring, instead of chip in, it's nicer if you bring some of these things. Agada, you're supposed to have your own agada. You can't count on your host having agada. And all of you should invest in agada you feel comfortable with English. transliterated or just translated, however you're comfortable, but you should have Agada you feel comfortable with, and preferably for the next class you should have your Agada already so you can take notes in the Agada. Matzah is expensive. By us, so fine, that's part of our budget. I don't want anyone to bring anything when they come to us. I'm very serious. Last year we had to stop our whole Seder because someone brought wine which we thought wasn't kosher for Pesach. Everyone was drinking it and suddenly someone noticed that it didn't have a kosher for Pesach symbol. And in the end we found it did have. But it caused our Seder to be derailed for about 45 minutes as we cleaned off everywhere that wine spilled. And only at the end of the Seder, when they were leaving, did we find in the fine print that it did say it was kosher for Pesach. So I learned my lesson. Don't bring anything. Your own Agada you could bring. Your own Agada please bring, and your own pillows please bring, so you could lean on. But everything else, don't bring. Even if it's just kosher for Pesach. No, we're going to make one rule and that's it. No one should bring anything.
I don't know, but I think other communities also, but Chabad, they don't, you know, people don't even go to each other's houses. You know, and they're looking
at right, there are communities where people don't go to eat by one another on Pesach. No, please, let's make one rule, no one should bring anything. So, but those who are not going to be by me, you should know that it is a big expense. The food on Pesach is expensive, and it is nice if a person brings his own matzah, if a person brings his own wine or grape juice. Yeah. What? People do that. When I go by people, I bring my own, yeah. Even when I'm by my in-laws, I bring my own matzah. And they're, what? I don't know. I've seen it done. I guess, look, maybe in the United States where people
no, here in Israel, you bring, like, even for Shabbat, like, no, you don't have to bring it, please don't bring stuff, and then like you come with like your own matzah and your own bottle of wine.
So you could blame it on me. Say, there's this one guy in the Machon who says that that's what everyone should do. No, tell him that I said that's the right thing to do.
Unless you know the person very well, it seems like there's a problem with the country. Like I just said before, we got guys coming from both Shuvah Yeshiva, from all different backgrounds. Unless they know you real well, they might be a little concerned. We're just coming,
right.
Be extra strict with pressure.
So what I used to do when I was in yeshiva, so I would ask the host before Pesach if he doesn't mind that I bring my own matzah, I'm bringing my own wine. I was straight because I knew some people don't want you to bring your own food to their table, so I asked.
I think that sounds more about for yourself.
Fine, you have to factor. I've seen both sides of the coin. I see people posting messages in newspapers, writing articles that they are very happy hosting all the guys that come to them, but they can't really handle the expense. I'm Baruch Hashem, I have a small family, but I have guests, aside from you guys, almost every Shabbos. People who come for, it is an expense. Now, I don't know what to tell you. You can't bring your own food, and I don't think you should bring your own food, but matzah, you have to factor what each person eats is costing about $10-$15. Dollars, not shekel. That's about, that's just the matzah that every person's eating. Now, for an Israeli, that's a lot of money. That's like a 60 shekel. You're talking about what each person eats, just matzah. We didn't say wine yet. Each person, you figure, finishes a bottle and a half of wine, so now you're up to 70 to 80 shekel. No, seriously. So you're talking close to 100 shekel, just the matzah and the wine that each person is going to eat. And we haven't spoken about anything else. I think it's reasonable that that people should chip in. You can't offer the person to pay. That's not nice. But you could bring your own, and I've seen that that's what's done here. I recommend that people do it, and you definitely should bring your own pillow. So, again, ask in advance. Okay. Say that. Look, any piece of advice is right, and any piece of advice is wrong. It all depends on how you apply it and what context. So you guys have to decide. I assume you're going to use your own intellect and figure out what the... Okay. Okay, when we approach the Seder, so we said we have 30 days before, we have Rosh Chodesh. From Rosh Chodesh we stop eating matzah so that the matzah will have an extra special taste for us when it comes Pesach. And then we have the Shabbos before, when the rabbi gives a special speech. Hopefully he's going to answer any questions we have. And that's called Shabbat HaGadol. And then we have the night before, when we search for the chametz. And after searching for the chametz, we say, any chametz that I didn't find, I hereby state, should be nullified. I broke down the cleaning of the house to clean, sell, search, burn, state. Thank the wife. We'll get that in a second. So clean, we said. Sell, we said. Search, we said. State. So that's what we state twice. We state once after searching for the chametz, and once the following morning after burning the chametz. We state that any chametz that's in our possession, we don't want to be in our possession. We're hereby making it free for all. Hefker, we're hereby proclaiming it to be out of our possession. What's called hefker. And then the following morning, we finish, we pray early, we have an early breakfast, and we burn whatever remaining matzah there is, and again, chametz there is, and again proclaim any chametz that we know of, that we don't know of, we want to be out of our possession. Now, by noon, we may not have any chametz in our possession, even a little before noon. You'll look at the calendars, 10:30 approximately. By that hour, chametz may not be in our possession, even though Pesach will only come at night. And this brings us to the next stage of our discussion, and that is that there's a difference between Pesach and Chag HaMatzos. We ordinarily call the holiday Pesach, Passover, but that's really a misnomer. The name Pesach really refers to the 14th, the day before Passover. And that was a holiday in and of itself. That was the day when we brought the special Paschal offering, and that's what's called Chag HaPesach. Pesach is really the 14th. On the 14th, we would bring the Paschal offering in the afternoon when we no longer have chametz in our possession. We'd wear special holiday clothing, as people do when they bring a special offering. And we'd bring a special offering together with that offering, shlamim, which we would eat the majority of the meat from that. Everyone would get a small piece of the Korban Pesach, the Paschal offering. And that night, we have the Seder, the night following the bring of the Paschal offering. So the afternoon is really Pesach. What we call Pesach, is the 7 days, is really Chag HaMatzos, the holiday of that we eat matzos on. The holiday of Pesach is really only the day before what we call Pesach. We have the afternoon, and some have the custom to recount the laws, how the Pesach offering was brought, because the Torah teaches us that if we recount the laws of an offering, it's as though we brought it. So that's why you'll see some people sitting and reading the laws of the Korban Pesach on that afternoon, and I recommend everyone take snaps. The Pesach, the Seder usually runs long, and it should run long, and it should be fun, and there should be strength to sing. I know what happened by us last year. After 4 cups, everyone's heads were down, and we barely had people who had strength to sing. Catch you next year, Rabbi. I don't know, I think we're only getting one person from last year this year. I don't know how many people are catching us next year. So, sleep. Guys, take a good long afternoon nap. And before you do that, come to my house. Those of you who are coming, we prepare on that afternoon, that morning, after we burn the chametz, we prepare the maror, we prepare the charoses, we measure out the matzah that we're going to eat that night, we measure out the maror that we're going to eat that night, so that we know how much we're going to eat. On Yom Tov, we're not supposed to measure, so we'll have to estimate. No one wants to eat extra maror unless you're eating lettuce as your maror, then okay, you could eat some more.
Yeah.
But if you're eating, like me, horseradish, then you don't want to eat an extra amount, so you measure it out before.
You want to cry?
Well, maybe I do want to cry. That's what we'll discuss. There is a custom that when we finish searching for the chametz, we sit down and we sing Eishes Chayil. And tonight, I told the guys earlier, we're going to combine our class on the Seder with our Binyan HaBayit class. And I want to go off on a tangent over here. One of the great rabbis once asked the student, what is Jewish home based on? So the student said, love and understanding. So he said, well, understanding is a nice thing to aspire to. It's not always there. And love is a nice thing to aspire to. That's also not always there. And our sages taught us that only a love that is not contingent on something external is a love that lasts. Can you really be so certain that you will attain such a love with anyone you're ready to marry, that you're willing to say that's what a marriage is based on? So the student said, you're scaring me. So what do you mean to say? So he said, I mean to tell you what the Medrash says, that Jewish home is based on the verse states in Koheles and Ecclesiastes, Tov lagever, it is good for a person, ki sa'ol minuchav, A young man should take a yoke on his shoulders when he's young. What yoke is that, says the Medrash? The yoke of a wife. Marriage is based on the willingness of a man to take upon himself the yoke of a woman, to take on that weight. So he says, that's marriage? So he says, that's the basis of marriage. You have to be willing to accept that yoke. And he expanded, said, we live in different worlds. Ordinarily, when men enter marriage, they think they want an intellectual counterpart, at best. They're looking for a chavrusa, they're looking for someone to think with, to talk to, and it's nice, but you have to look at the partnership differently. A person has to be willing to appreciate the world that a woman lives in, and a woman is busy with the home. She doesn't have to know how to read and write and do everything else. It's a plus, it's great. Rabbi Akiva Eiger's wife, he was the greatest rabbi in Europe, and his wife, they say, didn't know how to read Hebrew. And she was a great wife. Her job wasn't to be the chief rabbi of Europe. Her job was to be the chief rabbi's wife. And that means to take care of the home and to take care of the children and to bring a good home. When a person comes home and his wife asks him, what do you want for supper? And he says, the holy day of Pesach is coming. And I'm preparing, learning the halachos. I want to be able to share with you all the beautiful things about Pesach. I don't have time to think about what to eat for supper. And when she says, what should I wear to this wedding tonight? And he says, doesn't matter, you look great in anything. And when she says, tell me, which do you like better? And he says, I don't know, what difference does it make? What he's telling her is, I'm not in your world. Your world is the mundane world, and my world is the holy world, and I'm not interested in your world. When we approach Pesach, we're approaching a time where the woman is going to spend a lot of time cleaning the house. Historically, the Jerusalem Talmud already states that the women, their strength, what they put into Pesach, they take apart the closets to look for chametz. Maybe there was something in the crevice of the screw. The women are the ones that are really putting in the hard work for Pesach. And part of a good husband's job is to show appreciation for her area of the world. Even though if you'd ask a man, are you interested in cleaning today? He'd say, no, I'll hire someone to clean. I'm not going to spend my day cleaning. A wife is going to spend much of her life cleaning. You ask a husband, are you going to spend your time with the kids? He'll say, no, I'll send them to daycare. I have to work. I have to do 100 other things. Not going to spend my day at home taking care of kids. A wife very often spends much of her free time, so-called free time, she has a day off from work, then if she's a good mother, she's going to take the time to be with the kids. If a husband has a day off from work, how much of that is he really going to spend with the kids? We're not built for it the way they are. But we have to appreciate what they're doing. And that's why some have the custom that the night before Pesach, after we finish searching throughout the house, and we found those 10 little pieces that the kids hide, and we collect the 10 pieces of chametz that the kids hid around the house, and now we sit down, we say Eishes Chayim. We sing a song of appreciation to the woman, because she's just cleaned, we've just attested to the fact that she's cleaned the house so impeccably. Yeah. Impeccably. Yeah.
About 5 minutes ago, it sounded like you said that when you're doing the checking, like for the chametz, the man should do that.
Not the cleaning, the checking. The cleaning, of course, he has to help.
Why is the if you could say a woman is more accustomed to doing this, why is it better that the man
That's a long discussion as to why the halacha did it that way. But in general, they're the ones that are going to clean. We should help as much as possible. I had the good fortune to call a rabbi in Am Kfar HaRoeh yesterday. The man broke his shoulder. So I said to him jokingly, I said, so you're free from chametz cleaning this year. You're off the hook. You don't have to clean anything for Pesach. You're a one-armed man. So he said to me, free from cleaning? My heart is crying. My wife is going to clean without my help. You know how painful it is to me? Whatever I could do with one hand, I'll do. That was the answer I got. Back to Pesach. So, aside from the tremendous amount of cleaning that women put in, there's also a tremendous amount of shopping. which husbands hopefully will be able to help in. There's a lot of cooking. You have 7 days, and it's special cooking. You're not cooking with flour the way you would the rest of the year. We need the foods of the Seder night, be it the masa, be it the wine, be it the meat, the food that we're going to eat at the Seder, the maror, or the food for the rest of Pesach. It's still a Yom Tov. Holiday clothes. So Pesach is like any other holiday. You're supposed to wear Shabbos clothing for the Seder and for the Pesach in general. There is one custom that married people wear a kittel, or the head of the Seder wears a kittel at the night of the Seder, and that is a white garment, which traditionally was made of linen, which is the garment that we bury a person in. When a person passes away, we have the custom to take the cheapest material, which in ancient times used to be linen, and we make a simple garment, and the person dons that and is buried in that. We put it on him. He doesn't don it after he's dead, but that's what a person gets buried in. So the idea at the Seder is one of two things. Either it's an element of holiness, we're wearing the kittel, it's a special garment that we're wearing, just like people wore special garments when they brought a sacrifice, or we're commemorating the fact that we will die. Why is that so important? It's a reminder. We're going to sit at the Seder and we're going to do two things. We're going to remind ourselves of times that were bad, and we're going to remind ourselves of times that were good. At times we're going to cry, we're going to eat the bitter herbs. At times we're going to cry, we're going to remember the harmful things that we encountered, the hurtful things that the Jewish people encountered. And at times we're going to rejoice and we're going to be happy. And one of the things we do on the Seder different than any other night is that we take all our finest silverware out. Ever since the destruction of the temple, our sages instituted that a woman should never don all her jewelry, a table should never be set with all the fine silver. A person always has to show he's a little bit less than fully happy because the temple isn't built. The one exception is the Seder night. On this night, we're supposed to commemorate the fact that we are free men. And part of that commemoration is that we take every nice silver, gold vessel that we have, and if we can fit it on the table, we put it on wherever we could put it. So a person sitting at the table, and he's looking at all the silver goblets and all the wonderful wealth he's amassed, he's going to start feeling pretty good about himself. So a sage has instituted that he wears the garment he's going to be buried in. So every so often, if he feels like he's getting carried away, he should look down at the garments he's wearing, and he'll be reminded, wait a second, the worms are going to be eating through this. I'm going to be worm feed one day. What am I feeling so great about myself? It's customary to do the search for chametz with a feather, because in case we find any chametz, we sweep it away, even the crumbs. The morning of Pesach, the custom is that the firstborn child fasts, or if the child is too young, the parent fasts for the child. What we do today is that we go to Siyam, we partake of a festive meal, someone celebrating finishing a portion of learning, and that you'll find almost any respectable shul has a Siyam the morning of. So all you firstborns or parents of firstborn children, I have a firstborn son, he's too young to fast, I have to partake of a Siyam, otherwise I have to fast. Do I know of anyone who fasts? No? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know of anyone who fasts.
You only have to fast if you're not a shachrit, right?
Even if you're not a shachrit, if you woke up late, at least run and catch a siyum. Okay, the afternoon, what people don't do and they should do, and that's why I ask people to come to our home before Pesach, is prepare the table. The halacha says that when we come home the night of the Seder, we're supposed to begin right away so that the children won't fall asleep. And by most people, they lose a very precious half hour when they come home. Everyone's looking for the pillow, looking for the wine, for their favorite Haggadah. That's why I tell people, whoever's coming to us for the Seder, be there the day of, because I walk through the door, I start Kiddush. I walk through the door of my house, I start. That's what the halacha says we should do, and that's what, as far as I know, no one does. I merited to have a Seder by Rabbi Magnus, and that was one place where I saw he did it. He told me, come the afternoon before, because when I walk through the door, I make Kiddush. And that's what the halacha says. You should know that Friday night it's supposed to be the same way. You're not supposed to delay the meal. You walk through the door, you're supposed to make Kiddush if you can. If you'll have, Bezrat Hashem, you will have young children who will be rambunctious and pulling at the tablecloth, and then it's impossible to set the table because anything you set will be on the floor. So then you have to take another few minutes to set the table when you come home, and there's an extra set of hands to hold on to the children and set the table. But other than that, really Friday night is the same thing. So the afternoon, this year it's going to be Monday afternoon, I think, right? The Seder is Monday night. So Monday afternoon, we were supposed to prepare for the Seder and have the Seder plate ready, put in the fridge with the things that are necessary, have the pillows ready, everything's ready, the Haggadah, so that we're ready to begin. One thing to remember here in Israel, when you're buying matzah, if you're buying handmade matzah, many bakeries don't take off challah, so take off the challah before, because on Yom Tov you're not allowed to take off challah. In Chutz La'aretz you could eat it and say whatever will remain will be, I'll take off as challah. But here in Israel you're biblically obligated, or more obligated, to take off the challah, and therefore if you didn't take off challah, you're not going to be able to eat that matzah. Yeah. Same thing, if I'm not mistaken.
Which one?
It's like Israel, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Rabbi, you said about handy matzah that the hechsher doesn't guarantee it. It's not. You said you have an issue.
Right.
So how do we avoid that? The very same thing that you experienced.
By hand sticking. I showed you guys that hand stick. Or by buying from someone who hand sticks. I should have the number of a place that I'm going to order the rest of the matzahs for the guys from. That theoretically you shouldn't have that issue with. Okay, we like. Or you could buy machine matzah. Rav Listman gives only machine matzah in his house. Here in Jerusalem, the custom is only machine matzah. I wasn't born here. It's not my custom, but that's been the custom here for the last few years. We light candles, and the same thing, guys who are coming to me, you have to, when you come in the afternoon, purchase a part of the candles, or at least take ownership of part of the candles, so when I light candles, it's for you as well. We come to shul, and that night is the only night in which we say Hallel, just like we sang Hallel that night. And that night has a special, the night of Pesach has many special attributes, and some of the attributes make it like the day. We say Hallel only by day, and here too we say Hallel even though it's night, and we're going to see other attributes. We say there are two nights that are like a day, the night of Pesach and the night when the Mashiach is going to come. Yeah. The question is, why was the Hallel instituted? Was it instituted for everyone, or was it instituted for people who could not say the rest of the Haggadah? It seems that there used to be an institution that they'd read the whole Haggadah with Hallel in Shul. And those opinions would say that the Hallel was for that. And, if I'm not mistaken, that's what it revolves around. What was the original institution? Was it for everyone, or for those who won't be able to say it later? We say Hallel. We're going to say Hallel during the Haggadah. Right. See what your minig is. Some have a custom to say Hallel, some have a custom not to. Find out what your host is doing also. And now we hit the Seder. And when we hit the Seder, so we're going to make it another class. Just a second, we'll close the recording here.